Today, we are joined by Top Shelf Gaming intern Kara Ashbeck as we recap IndieCade, then ask, how can explicit content create meaningful emotional resonance in games? All that and more on this week's episode of Trust Circle. Hello, and welcome back. You all made it, and so did we, to another episode of Trust Circle.
Da-da-da-da!
We are Top Shelf Gaming's number one and only podcast. We post every Wednesday at 6 a.m.
Sharp-ish.
Ish?
Sharpish?
No. We made it last week.
We did make it last week.
We hit it.
We totally did it. I am your host, as always, Devin Valdivia. I am joined by my wife, who is now officially known as Valerie Valdivia.
Yay!
She can't contain her
excitement about it.
I'm beside myself.
She's already having regrets.
With us, as always, is Top Shelf Gaming's... I always forget the order. Founder, editor-in-chief, creator, crazy person, something, madman, Marcus Garrett. And, for the first time ever, our first guest, Kara Ashbeck.
Yay! I'm an intern for Top Shelf Gaming.
I like how you didn't even let me say
hi. No, because I knew if I let you go, you were gonna like go off.
You
and
steamrolled past poor
hey
Marcus.
There,
no,
ladies.
No, no, no. Let's try to avoid this. So, Kara, welcome to the Spaghetti Show. This is our number one pasta podcast.
Thank you.
Postcast.
Yes, today's topic, rigatoni.
Postcast.
Podcasta. Pasta casta? Anyway.
Woof.
Macaroni.
Macaroni.
There we go.
That's a very meta joke.
Well, I think we are... like a real life podcast now. We have a guest. Like, that's kind of like...
Yeah, we've arrived.
We're here.
I've legitimized you.
All we need now is MeUndies sponsorship.
I know.
There we go.
Maybe Blue Apron or Casper or something.
Casper.
Call us. We'll do it.
I like...
We'll sell out.
I like all those podcasts that have sponsors that are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, 1 month, it'll be... Harry's, which is a, you know, shaving razor
thing, yeah.
And then the next month it'll be Dollar Shave Club.
Right.
You're like, okay.
This is the best subscription shaving subscription you can ever buy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is the best subscription shaving subscription you can ever buy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, subscription shaving subscription.
We're all just a bunch of sellouts here.
Yes we are.
Well, not yet, but we're willing to be.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are trying to sell out, please.
We'll literally sell anything.
Yeah,
call
we'll
us.
Sell anything.
And sometimes we talk about video games every now and then.
Sometimes.
Yeah. So every week we take a topic and we talk about it. And hopefully we talk about it in a way that makes sense to regular people too. Like Valerie. What makes
it's
you
nice
ready
of you to call me regular.
Yeah.
What are you saying about the rest of us?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I can speak for you and me, Marcus. We're, I wouldn't call us regular.
I wouldn't call you regular.
Good.
But my bowels are...
the proper fiber intake for you.
Yes.
Moving and grooving down there, are you?
Broccoli, 1 cup of broccoli every morning for breakfast.
That's good advice.
I feel like that would mostly
just make you farty, wouldn't it?
I feel like it'd mostly make you hate broccoli.
Who says being farty is a bad thing?
Yeah.
Ooh, there you go.
Yeah.
Cheers to that.
Yeah. Well, so the three of us, myself, Marcus, and Kara, we all have at least one article up on Top Shelf Gaming. Valor, that makes you... Maybe you're the non-normal one.
Am I a minority for once?
The only time you'll be a minority. Well, you got the women thing, so, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is this too much of a deep cut? I think at this point, Kara has more articles... on Top Shelf Gaming than you might.
I think I have like
I
two, so yeah, definitely, for sure.
Yeah.
Yes!
I basically post the podcast, and that's it. So so you have ranked me. No, but so Valor, you, well, one day I hope to drag you kicking and screaming on Top Shelf Gaming. You have not written anything, nor do you play video games that often, and because of that, you're special. And because of that, every week we give you a special word that at any point in time, if you feel the need to ask a question, have something defined, or need to just say something or tell us we're all out of our minds, you get to yell it out. And this week, we went to Disneyland, so I want you to think of the best Disney-themed word of the week ever.
Let's see.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
He said the best.
The best. Yeah.
What would make Walt proud?
You want to honor his memory, don't you?
I'll shout merchandise.
Ouch. That's a great word.
Capitalism. All right.
Quotes baseballs. Yeah.
Well, speaking of merchandise, Fallory, we went to Disneyland this week.
That we did. We went to Disneyland for free.
We always
what?
Did.
How?
Our friend Caitlin gave us free park hopper tickets.
Bianchi?
For our wedding gifts.
Yeah.
So lucky.
So Disneyland for free is kind of the best way to experience Disneyland, because you don't have that like looming pressure of trying to get your money's worth.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of money being worth a day at Disneyland.
And technically, we literally just spent Disney's money, because Caitlin, she's a cast member. She works for the Greater Disney Company. And so she didn't even pay for them. So really, thanks Walt for the money.
thanks
Mickey.
We did our due diligence in food costs.
Yeah.
That's true. It was weirdly busy.
Apparently it's like fall break or something for a lot of schools. That was never something that I had up in the Bay's areas.
Kids get a week off in October now.
I guess it was Yom Kippur and Columbus Day.
Okay.
Just but see,
whole grab bag of holidays.
Like, I don't know, just
a whole
come back next week. I don't know. So it was super busy.
On a Thursday, right?
On a Thursday in October.
We tried, but it was really busy. So I mean, we did like a few rides, but then we kept like I'd be like, this ride doesn't look that bad, and then we'd cruise by the sign that was like, you know, wait 120 minutes.
Oh.
And then I was like, but it doesn't seem like there's that many people here. And then like once you get into like the bowels of the ride line, you realize that they've got like every partition up so that it like snakes around like a maze.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I can't.
Yeah. I usually go and I see the lines, and it's like, you know, you see all the rows they have, and like, I've never seen everyone like actually use all those. Like, they actually had them all open.
Yeah. All those chain links are up, yeah.
Yeah, but it was.
I mean, it was still fun.
We saw Haunted Mansion all Nightmare Before
Spookified.
Christmas.
Oh. That, we saw.
That's my favorite version of it.
I'd never seen it like that. Yeah. It was good. We saw the Aladdin show at California Adventures. Now a Frozen show.
Yeah,
which is
pretty
cool.
It's been like three shows between the Aladdin show and this show.
Sorry, I'm not in that. No, it has it. It went straight from Aladdin to Frozen.
It went Aladdin, then like 2 months off, and then Frozen.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Pray tell,
sir. Yeah. I think you're speaking out of your rear.
Maybe.
He is.
Speaking of rears.
As he usually does.
Yeah.
Speaking of rears, as exciting as Disneyland was for us, Kara and Marcus, you did something possibly even more exciting than I am.
What was
more
the thing?
Why are you saying rears?
Speaking of rears.
Yeah. We were actually talking about butts. Where's the transition?
I made it up here.
Okay, well, if no one else is tracking. Anyway, we did. We went to IndieCade.
Yes, we did.
And it was Kara. It was your first time.
It was my first
time. It was my third time. And it was very different, because it's usually in Culver City. This year it was at USC. As we record this, they're actually giving away awards to all of the winning games, but IndieCade is a video game festival specifically celebrating and showcasing a bunch of smaller independent video games, some made by a single person, some made by a team of like up to like 12.
Yeah.
But these are like really small games, small, I guess, in scope and length and in budget, mostly.
Yeah. But, merch.
Merch, yeah.
So so does that mean, like, anybody can, like, is there, like, a platform that you can put a game on once, like, you make a game? Like, what makes it, like, indie?
I'm gonna let Devin take it.
Why me?
Because you've answered this, and I've heard you answer it.
I don't know if this is actually the correct term. So, what I understand indie to be, mainly smaller studios. There are large studios that, you know, hundreds of employees. They spend millions easily on games, and they generally put
out...
Like Blizzard. Like EA.
Ubisoft.
Like Ubisoft. Yes. There you go. See, yeah. We're slowly learning you some video games.
Activision.
There you go.
Yes. I mean, those are... I guess they're developers too, but they're... Publishers. Okay, we can go down there later.
There's a whole
publisher.
So, I mean, it's similar to indie filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
It's smaller studios. Most they are independent.
Mostly self-funded.
Yes. Although crowdfunding is becoming very popular among indie development, which is, you know, not shocking because crowdfunding is kind of becoming popular
for everything. I assume the parallel applies to indie filmmaking, that there's a smaller budget, but then greater creative freedom.
Yes, exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's like indie movies, but with games.
So going off of that, Indiecade is my favorite event of the year because it's a place where I know that I can go and I'm just going to find just like the most creative and just weird games, the most inventive, the most innovative. These people are trying things that a big developer is not going to ever try because it's not safe. You know, it's
risky.
It is. And these are people's like passion projects. A lot of people quit their jobs in order to work on these games. A lot of people are still working, and then in their free time, they're spending all their time making these games. People are going broke to make these games, you know. They're putting everything into these games, and the end result oftentimes is something just really, really magical. So Kara, I want to hear from you what your experience was like getting to enjoy these innovative games.
Well, they were all just so amazing and how creative they were. My favorite one was actually a game called ICU, which was carried over from a thesis project by students at USC. It was held at the USC School of Cinematic Arts, so a lot of them were game developers, and this was their thesis projects that they wanted to carry over to commercial. And ICU was a horror reality stream that took place on Twitch, so they would get a player and live stream them, and then people would put in obstacles who are watching the Twitch stream. So you could pay in-game currency and then give them obstacles for the player, and they would react to it on the stream. And I thought that was a genius concept that would bring a lot of players together, and it makes it more interactive to know that you're actually impacting the player's experience.
So some of our team, or some of our staff, played it, right? So
yeah.
I know Josh.
Josh and Evan played it. Okay. I was on the stream, so I gave Evan a lot of obstacles. I gave him a glitch screen and a monster hat.
That's awesome.
So there was a giant monster with a witch hat on that just showed up in front of him. Josh got criticized a lot on the stream, unfortunately, because he died a lot, and they said he was going to die within minutes, and then he died.
Good job, Internet. Yeah, that's one of the things I've noticed a lot with indie games is... a lot have really been the forerunners for social integration.
Mm-hmm.
Twitch integration in games is something that is starting to see a lot more.
What the heck is Twitch?
Oh, I'm not taking this one.
She's been like trying to like.
I'm just like what's this word mean?
Would you like to explain?
Sure. You know how you can watch someone live, like when they're at an event, like maybe the live news, and then you watch them cover something?
Yes.
Yeah, Twitch is a lot like that. There's a delay, so it's not completely live, but you can watch people do something. You could watch them play a game, and then you can comment on what they're doing with a bunch of other people.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be live, but it usually is.
It's more fun.
Yeah.
It's live, yeah.
So it's this whole platform. It just basically... a broadcasting platform for gamers to... I mean, it's extended beyond gaming now, but its core focus...
Gaming competitive eating?
Yeah, yeah. But now it's just... like basically known for live streaming video mm-hmm. games.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so all those YouTubers you see on Let's Play or on Let's Play you see on YouTube, they are usually also streaming all through Twitch, and their YouTube is often the rebroadcast of the Twitch stream.
Oh, sure, I understand that.
Syndication.
Yeah. And it's on by Amazon now, so there's that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Twitch started out as a pretty independent, it was a very small sort of thing. It just built, gained huge success, and then got bought by a giant mama company.
As it always happens that way. Yeah. So I want to hear what else, because I know among our group, there were 6 of us TSG folk that went there, and you were the only one who kind of had this like built out schedule of what you were going to do.
I looked on the website and I found events that I liked, and I booked myself from 1 to 6 with events, and I basically just went from one event to the other. My favorite one was actually the last one that took place from 5 to 6. It was a keynote speech.
I got to go there too.
Yeah, Marcus was with me, and so was Elisa.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the topic was a keynote speech about women in esports. So the speakers were 2 women. One of them used to be professional in esports, and the other one currently has a team, and she's the leader of the Counter-Strike team for all women. And they compete, and they're getting paid professionally for doing this.
Making some good money.
I think you're going to interview her, right?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Mm. So let me just butt in here for a second, ask you a quick question, then we'll move away from it. Just, apropos of nothing, do you consider esports just, as legitimate as regular sports?
I think they are being treated like that more and more as we're going on. I mean, especially for me, I don't really like watching regular sports, and esports is something that I can actually understand and get into because it's so accessible, mm-hmm. whereas if I tried to play football, I would just fail. Esports, I mean, I might fail, but I'd have more fun failing. And it seems a lot more accessible versus going to a football field and passing a ball around. Just, you're going on your computer.
Yeah. I think that was one of the interesting things about yesterday's talk, too, was that they were talking about the discrepancy between how many women are actually playing mm-hmm. video games and then how many are playing competitively, because this is the one thing where like there's the even playing field.
I think they said the percentage was 30%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
30% of women play these games, but yet they're not being represented in the professional field.
What's new?
Well, see? Just like sports. Well,
but I think what I found interesting, though, was because in sports, in, traditional sports, like, there are actual, like, the way men and women are anatomically, they're like there are differences in how our bodies can react to certain levels and like certain physical activities. But in a video game, you like remove all of those physical barriers.
Yes.
And so the like playing field has been evened out. So you would postulate that there would be more women, but there's not. And so that talk kind of...
Mm-hmm. Well, going off of that, like what you're saying, Marcus, about the, non-negotiable biological differences, that's probably why, for most Olympic sports, it's men's and women's.
Yeah.
Does mm-hmm. that mean that in esports, it's co-ed competition? Because you don't need,
In League of Legends, they had their first female LCS player. I think her name mm-hmm. was Amelia. They brought her up in the talk. And that was co-ed. She was mm-hmm. in an all-male team, but she was, I think, the support. And I think she quit after a few rounds. At least that's what they said, because the pressure was too much.
Merge, why is support want?
It's, if one were to be stereotypical, that would be the, the place where a girl would go play.
I actually asked one of the speakers about that. I used to main support in League of Legends, and I asked her, have you found any truth to the stereotype that women mostly play support roles in these games? And she said that qualitatively it's been true, because they feel less pressure in being perfect in a support role versus another role.
Hmm. Yeah. What does a support role do?
So
Mercy.
Overwatch. Think of all of the support classes. So that's Zenyatta, Mercy, Lucio, Ana. They're all like healing. They're all like basically helping other people shine.
They're the mamas.
The mamas.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Literally in Ana's case.
Yeah.
They also set up a lot of plays, at least in League of Legends. I mean, they're critical to setting up plays.
There's a very good argument to be made that they are like the most important role.
Yeah.
And they ward. Mm-hmm. They give players sight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, even in like Overwatch, because that's the game that Valerie understands most.
That's the lens through which I see all video games now.
It's a really good lens to look through.
It is. And like, in competitive play, people target the support first and try to kill them first. Because without that support, the rest of the team generally kind of crumbles. Because it's that support that's like keeping everyone alive and keeping everyone with the skills and with the supplies that they need.
Yeah.
But because I think there's this stigma of like it's like not this like war
war, it's not the glory position.
Yeah,
you don't get all the kills.
Like I'm not on the like front lines. I'm like not the one.
You're
like
not the soldier.
You aren't dad.
You're not Hanzo.
Yeah, like I guess in Overwatch terms, you'd be healing the tank. That's mostly your role. Like you're healing, or it depends what kind of support you are, but there's healers, there's people who provide shields, and there's people that mainly, like, crowd control. I don't know if you know that term, crowd control, but
I know it when, like, the police do it. That's the best
response ever. So, you know, I want to talk about IndieCade a little bit, but I also want to get on to our main topic. So are there any other, standout games, kind of rapid fire, you know, anything either of you saw that you're excited to see develop more, or just was a fun experience just to be there and get to see firsthand?
I know for me, my favorite game was this VR game called Mare, and I'm pretty sure it's called...
John?
It's called Mare.
Like Mare? Like the sea?
It's M-A-R-E.
Oh, like a horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a beautiful horse.
But I don't know why it's like called that. I think it's short for Nightmare. Because there's these shadowy figures that kind of pop out. But think of The Last Guardian in VR and if there were still hope for it.
what are we talking?
Valerie gets that joke, right?
Totally gets it. It's so...
But we talk about Last Guardian in the coming weeks.
Cool.
Yeah. So you basically... You don't have a controller, but you control this mechanical owl by looking at certain waypoints, and if you look at it, then your owl will like fly to each perch.
And this is unrelated to that movie, The Guardians of Gahul, or whatever. Yes. Wait, it's unrelated?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's completely unrelated.
Contains the term guardians and also owls.
No. The Last Guardian is a different game.
Okay. I'm getting all sorts of wires crossed up in here.
And so you guide this cute little girl. Mm-hmm. She's probably like 7.
Mm-hmm.
And she's being like attacked by all these shadowy figures. And so you kind of like, by flying to different perches, she will follow you, and so you have to find the like right sequence of perches to like fly to like make her follow you and like guide her through all of these obstacles.
You're like her Patronus.
Yeah. And it's just really fun. I don't know, like it's really pretty and it works really well, and you just use your head.
And you had to wait in line for that, right?
I waited like 2 hours.
What headset was on?
Oculus. Okay. Although it looked very different from the Oculuses that I've tried, so I think I was finally using like...
Merge. Is Oculus the one that looks like Cyclops in X-Men? Where it goes over both your eyes?
Kind of look like that.
It looks like a tech deck skateboard. Just over...
That looks a good description.
Your awful picture. Kara, were there any other standout?
Well, the one, I actually got to play through a whole game that was nominated at IndieCade. Unfortunately, I didn't get to go to their stand, but it was called Replica. And it's an iPhone-based game. I mean, you don't play on an iPhone, but you play, it's on Steam, and it's on the computer, and what you do is you're trying to hack into someone's phone who is a terrorist, or suspected for being a terrorist. It fits into what's happening right now with the Apple trying to backdoor into all of iPhones. But you are being held also, and you're trying to hack into their phone to see proof of whether they're a terrorist or not. And you send it to who's keeping you, and they basically are holding over your head, if you don't do this for us, you're not a patriot. And
oh, jeez.
And you're not going to see your family. Your family's not going to be a good position if you don't do this for us.
Wow.
And this guy is your friend from high school, so... And you have to hack into his Facebook and his Twitter. I mean, they give them different names, but it's just... It really emotionally resonated with me. I felt like...
Because you're a terrorist.
Yes! Yeah. No. Don't kill me, FBI.
Because you are plotting,
Kara, I'd like to fly in a plane again sometime.
I mean, but speaking, you know, you guys talk about IndieCade being a place where, you know, you can show games that are taking risks. That's a risky game.
Yes.
I mean, Ubisoft, for all their talk of, you know, Rainbow Six and Splinter Cell, they're not putting out that game. Like, not something they would make.
Exactly.
You know, that's a really good example of the type of concept, even, you know, that can only really come out of those smaller studios that are willing to just do whatever they want.
It's an homage to Papers, Please, also.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a very politically...
The name alone is giving me a lot of context.
Yes.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll return with our... We're going to have to make this a question, aren't we?
Yeah.
We'll come back with a question of the week. And we're back for the break that I don't think they experienced. I don't even know how we're breaking this up. Are we doing songs? Are we doing like a fun like interlude? Are we doing...
Sweet guitar riff.
Sweet.
We had that song last time, and it was like a really good song. Do you even listen?
I listen to... Okay, so... I listen to the beginning and the end.
That's funny!
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Something just happened.
Everywhere.
So, we have our intern meeting right before we record this podcast, and today I taught everyone about reviews and how to review about how to review video games, and I talked about how people only read the introduction and then skip immediately to the conclusion.
So true.
So it's just the beginning and the end.
So that's me.
Okay.
So
you're part of the problem.
Yeah, I'm part of the problem. If you could just insert like a really awesome like cow moo at that break.
Okay.
That would just be sweet. Just
right.
So hopefully you guys appreciated that awesome cow moo.
They did.
But we're gonna...
Okay.
I'm speaking for them. They loved it.
Yes.
People love me. I have properties in Cowville.
I have the best cows.
I have the best cows. Milk.
There's no one who respects cows more than me.
They're great.
I'm starting this cow farm. It's gonna be... Mooch.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
That was scarily accurate.
that was terrifying. I need an adult now.
And if you cross me, there will be hell to pay. Because of his hair. Because it's not real, so it's like a toupee. Alright. Anyway.
So moving on.
Moving on.
There's suddenly we have another guest this week. It's Bessie the heifer. So, Bessie, we're going to move on to our question of the show, which this week is, can explicit content bring... I wrote it down. It got all kinds of messed up.
Oh.
You wrote it. Okay,
Devin
pause.
Wrote it down. He tapped it with his thumb.
Yeah, it's on your phone. Yeah. It's not like you have bad handwriting.
No, it actually just got pasted over.
Oh my gosh! This is why we can't have nice things.
Our question of the show is: can explicit content bring out greater emotional resonance in games and other forms of media? Kara, is my understanding that you wrote an article on TopShelfGaming.net titled, I have this one written down.
Will that help?
Yes. You wrote an article titled Player and Characters 1, Why Uncensored Games Are the Most Important Impact... See, I can't even do it.
Who taught you how... Did you grow up in a barn?
Kara, you wrote an article.
Didn't help.
Didn't help. Kara, you wrote an article.
Yes.
Tell us about this article.
Yeah.
All about it.
I was thinking of games that really forced me to think about what my choices were, especially in games like Heavy Rain and Mass Effect, where your choices are a huge part of the gameplay experience. And I was saying in my article, I referenced the trolley problem, which is a classic philosophical dilemma, ethical dilemma, about whether when a trolley's coming down and then you have access to a lever that could drop it off course, the current course, it will run over 5 people and kill them. But if you pull the lever, it'll go the other direction, which will only kill 1 person. Would you pull the lever? Most people would. So they would sacrifice one for the many. But in a different situation...
While giving the Spock hands.
Yeah. In a different situation, a trolley's coming and it's going to kill 5 people. But if you push someone in front of it, then that'll save those 5 people. And most people would not push that person, even though they would pull the lever in the other situation. And I was exploring how video games can do this and make more explicit storytelling with these hard choices and hard dilemmas. And I was saying that those dilemmas can have more impact if it's explicitly shown.
So, you're saying is games should really dig into those hard-hitting moments and not hold back, which you point out in your article, and I think, you know, we even here talked about a few examples of games often do that.
Yes.
I think we even mentioned it in one of our earlier podcasts, Marcus, if you can remember which one, where we talked about player choice.
Episode 2, 57 minutes.
Thank you, sir. No, we talked about how, you know...
Don't fact-check that. A lot of But if you want to, you could go to my website. You're going to be live fact-checking.
No, but we've talked about this idea that games like giving you player choice, but a lot of times that doesn't really have any resonance. It's just a thing to do, but doesn't enhance or detract from really the story you're trying to tell.
Merch, are you saying there are no, like, stakes?
I am saying,
well, games I have a steak company. I have the best steaks. They're all sourced from my cow farm.
What are they pumping into you, Bessie?
Bessie's just greatness, by the way.
America greatness.
Yeah. No, so one of the games that you talk about being a bad example, an example of when a game is as pulled some punches or pulled some of their content out, is Mass Effect, and specifically with the romance options.
Yeah.
And you see the characters, you know, you develop these relationships and you get to the point where, you know, they're going to have an intimate little moment here. And they do so and they show it, but the characters are partially or sometimes fully clothed during the moment. And
Shepard is fully clothed in the scene with Samantha Traynor.
Yeah.
And they're in the shower. And who showers with all their clothes on? That doesn't make any sense. And Traynor, who's in the shower already, is in there with her underwear on.
And, like you do.
Yeah. She's a never nude.
How else am I going to do my laundry?
Yeah, no, but it's a small moment, but something like that can easily just completely remove you.
Yes.
From the moment and from any emotional impact that would have had. And I think we see that a lot with games when it comes to specifically sexual content and violence.
Yeah.
Those are the two Those are the two most commonly used themes in video games, I would say.
Well, those are also two of the most common things that would likely be censored, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, I mean, the correlation lies therein.
Yeah. So, what... Miss Bessie?
Sorry. No, nothing. I was trying to burp quietly. Now I'm Marcus, talking about it.
There is no such thing as quiet burp.
It was out here. I was trying to be discreet, but now it's all out there, and we have to live with it.
Would you say your burp was uncensored?
Would you say that?
I tried to censor it.
But it just fired back.
Yeah, it did.
It backfired.
So
I feel more emotionally connected to you.
Resonance.
Yeah, resonance is just right there.
So, Kara, if you were suddenly somehow put like in the art director's position for those scenes now, what would you consider like an ideal portrayal of those scenes as far as the balance of showing the emotional impact, like just the literal visual graphic content? What would be the best kind of depiction of that moment in Mass Effect from your perspective?
Well, I think ideally it should portray sex as accurately as it can. I mean, maybe not so accurate as in, I mean, they show every moment, but I mean, accurately as in it shows the relationship between Shepard and their love interest. Like, it accurately shows what their dynamics are and what they get out of sex from each other and how that builds their relationship. And I think if it's just gratuitous sex, then it doesn't have as much of an impact, and a lot of people actually brought that up on a Reddit thread, which I am calling a threadit.
Yes!
And they mentioned that they didn't like the sex in Mass Effect or in really any other video games because they portray sex so pretty. It's everything goes perfectly, everyone's happy, and there's no sweat, there's no passion, they're not having fun. And I think ideally when Shepard goes into these relationships, or when any of us go into relationships, I mean, just, I think if we applied those real human aspects of our relationships into video games, I think it would emotionally resonate with more players, especially when they make the choice to be sexually active for their
protagonist. You could almost say that, you know, sex in video games gives a whole new meaning to in-betweens.
Yeah.
Come on. That was funny.
Mersh, I don't get it.
You were being sarcastic.
I made a nerdy animation joke. So,
oh, you mean like the in-betweens in between animation frames?
Yeah.
Oh, that went over my head.
Because it's sex and it's like in between. Anyway, I thought it was funny. I'm not funny. So, whatever. I did my best.
Yeah. So, just to kind of ground things in this conversation, what do you mean when you use explicit? What does that word mean to you?
In a more general sense, explicit usually means seeing mature content. Like, if a game is going to put mature content in the story, why not show it? That's mostly my point of why not talk about it in a more explicit way at the very least if you're not going to show it, because you have those themes in there. And if they're just going to be a connotation or just a backdrop of the game, then that's fine. But if the characters are actually going through that and it's not something that has happened already, it's something that you're interacting with, then I think showing that content would have a more impactful emotion on the player, because then they're actually going through what their character's going through. And that bridges the gap between us making choices for them, because I think we should be in a mindset similar to the character when they're making these really life-changing choices with high stakes. And I know that when I played Mass Effect and I had those high stakes with me, I didn't consider that I might potentially be killing a whole species of aliens. That didn't cross my mind, and it's just, even if it did, it's not, I don't care. I'm not emotionally invested because I don't live in that world.
You don't like feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think if we experienced what our characters are experiencing, then I think that could bridge the understanding of what they're going through, and we can take those considerations while we make the choice and have more of a weight behind it.
Yeah. The second example of a game you use in your article is of a game that you use as a as a positive example of using explicit content, and that was Heavy Rain. I'm not even going to bother using a spoiler tag here. If you haven't played Heavy Rain by now, just...
Please do.
Turn this thing off and go play it. There's a scene where one of your characters has to get rid of one of their fingers.
Why?
To save their son.
Okay.
Or to get a hint to save their son.
I was like, really, really high stakes.
Because the stakes are high. Yeah. And in that scenario, no punches are pulled. That would be considered extremely explicit, probably by anyone's standards. I agree with the point you made in your article that moment was made meaningful because it didn't hold back. Because you didn't have to sit. You had to do it yourself, and you could not look away.
Yeah.
You had to sit there, and you had to face the consequence of what you chose to cut it off with, and you had to actually...
And every action he takes, you have to control that with the controller in a motion that's similar to what he's making.
Yeah, there were several moments in that game that kind of... I had to actually physically pause the game and, like, take a break and be like, okay, like, this is about to happen. I need to, like, get ready to, like, face this thing.
Yeah.
And then move forward knowing that because, for all the flaws that game has, I think it is probably a prime example of the impact that explicit content can bring. So... Therefore, you are not.
That was a Fairly Odd Parents reference for all of you 90s kids.
I love that show.
Yeah.
It's a really good show.
None of you are getting my jokes today. It's not my day for jokes.
Do you think every game that has a mature rating, do you think they need to show explicit content, or are there other ways that you can show something explicitly without it necessarily being visually graphic?
I think you can definitely do that, especially in the conversations that you have with other NPCs. And, like, say if something traumatic happened to an NPC.
Sorry.
Non-player character.
Thank you! You're welcome.
Thank you for asking. But if you're talking to an NPC and they went through something traumatic, then if you ask them about what happened, they could describe it explicitly, at least if that fits into their relationship. And I think that in itself can be considered explicit, especially in the way they describe it. If they pull no punches in what happened to them, then that in itself can put you in a very explicit mindset and just, wow, that happened. And you can put yourself in their place as they're describing it. I had that experience actually with a visual novel called The House in Fata Morgana about sexual assault. And
oh, wow.
I'd never experienced that, but this character did. And the way she described it was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I cried as I was reading what she was saying, and it was really heartbreaking for me to read that. I mean, and to hear that in the media when people make fun of that,
when people, like, belittle it.
Yeah. It takes a lot of courage to come out and talk about your experience. And that's what this character was going through to another character who'd never experienced that. Mm-hmm. And this character who did that to her was this guy's father.
Oh.
And even though the game didn't explicitly show that content, they told it in such an explicit way that I felt like I could put myself in her shoes. I mean,
yeah, Valerie, I want to turn it over to you and get some of your thoughts on this. But one of the things that I thought of while reading your article, Kara, was like Christian movies.
Mm-hmm.
And just Christian entertainment.
God is dead.
God
or isn't dead.
Two.
Isn't dead. Sorry. Yeah, isn't dead. That's the movie.
Definitely, definitely not the Christian
sorry.
Version.
Sorry. That's the remake.
Gritty remake.
That's the good remake.
Yeah, I actually sat myself down and watched God's Not Dead a couple months ago for reasons that I still am trying to discern. But I've seen my fair share of Christian entertainment media movies, and one of my major issues with that form of entertainment is that there's such I don't know if it's a fear, but I guess there's a or some sense of obligation to protect from explicit content that it's not depicted or even hinted at.
Yeah.
But because of that, nothing that is depicted feels real.
Yeah.
Because real life sucks sometimes.
It does.
Like, real life is terrible. And, you know, video games are a form of media. They're a form of art. They're a form of expression. They're a form, they're a representation of the human experience. And so I think if you're going to address things that matter to people, like, there really almost has to be some form of explicit content to it, because that's what life is.
Yeah.
So Valerie, I just want to get your thoughts on this, maybe in terms of video games, but also, you know, you are outside media expert.
Yeah. Let's see, jumping off points that occurred to me while I was reading Kara's article was, I thought of an example where the converse effect happened, where the inclusion of explicit content took me out of the story. And a notable example of this that probably most people will agree on is Game of Thrones, a show that, due to its platform of HBO, has from the get-go been able to be explicit in its depiction of, boobs and blood, dragons and, you know, and all that. That's kind of what it's, like, known as by people
HBO,
who are immersed in it.
Boobs and dragons.
Because, I mean, it's like...
Dragons and paddy wagons.
Oh, jeez.
That one hit.
Was not a euphemism, it just rhymed.
Well, it is now.
Okay.
I'm not sure what for.
I mean, since it... I think it started in 2010, and that was pre the era of Netflix original content, Amazon original content, you know, all that. It, since it was on HBO, it was able to be explicit earlier than that. And so, since it was on HBO, it was very liberal with its inclusion of scenes that didn't necessarily seem to augment the story in any way. Like, I mean, there's some egregious examples, particularly in the first season, where, like, there's no character development happening. Like, these scenes, these intimate scenes are, like, treated as, like a backdrop. Like, there's this one character, Littlefinger, he runs, like, a brothel. And there's just, like, stuff going on, and you're like, why? You're like, no! Why is that going on? I don't need to see that. Whereas, like, in contrast, like, other parts of the show where maybe your point of that actually showing it could help build the character relationships, like when Jon Snow and Ygritte, mid-season spoiler alert, when they go in the cave, you know, physically and literally.
Wow! Sorry!
This is a family show!
Sorry.
This is a family show.
Like, I mean, that gets, you know, tasteful discretion shots.
Yeah.
So, I mean, definitely Game of Thrones is an example where I think the sex is used somewhat slapdashedly, whereas also in that show, I mean, it takes place in a medieval setting, so there's tons of stabbing and warfare. Whereas that, I don't have a problem with. Like, if you're creating a fantasy show set in a hostile medieval world, like, that's going to be a lot more a part of it than it is in present day.
Well,
so I think
that's what I've been thinking too, as we've been having this, like, conversation. When I think of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like, all of those movies, except for one, has a PG-13 rating, and the one that doesn't is Deadpool, and like, if Deadpool was PG-13, that movie would not be Deadpool.
Yeah, I agree.
That,
yeah,
like,
completely.
Because that character is crass, he is super violent, he is... you know, all of these things, but, like, it made sense in his character and, like, in that world that those comics set up, that like, his movie should have been rated R, and I think they handled it really, really, really well.
It would have been disloyal to the character.
It would have been
not
completely...
Yes.
Yeah.
And with the other Marvel movies, like, you don't need to show someone's arm getting like, ripped off. Like, because it's not, because the violence itself is not integral to the character. Like, Deadpool is a violent, like, wild card guy. He's, you know, super flashy. And so how he kills enemies is actually a part of his character development. And I think that's a good example of why showing something explicit, you know, really helps build that story and, like, helps make it a better experience. And I'm still mad at my dad for letting my sister see.
Oh my gosh, how old is she? Like, 9?
She was, like, 10.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well. And I was like, it was rated R. Like, you should have known. And he's like, I didn't know. I'm like,
well, it was Spider-Man.
It's not even R. It's a hard R.
Right? Oh, I bet people just, like, they're just like, oh, it's a comic book movie. You know, fun for kids. It kind of goes along with those themes we're talking about, whereas parents will just buy video games for their kids, being like, it's a videos game, you know? It's probably about a cute little plumber, when in reality, no, it's rated M for...
Yeah.
Mature!
So, the buzzword that's flying through my head right now is just, it's authenticity.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we as millennials are really good at sniffing that out.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes better than others. But, you know, what I'm hearing from this is explicit content for the sake of authenticity.
Yes.
and accurate portrayal and delivered of emotions and of moments and of experiences is important. Are there any examples we can give or think of, either in games or outside? Well, I guess you gave one, where games they've gone too explicit to the point where it has then, you know, done away with authenticity. The example I'm thinking of right now is I'm playing through Mafia 3, and there are some moments in that game. It's a very violent game. There are some moments, especially early on, some of the story points, the violence seems very, it's very explicit, but very grounded and feels authentic and feels justified in a weird way for the sake of the story. But then, like, the moment-to-moment gameplay, you know, like, you're... Every stealth kill is like a super vicious, like, knife stab, and like literally like in like the face or like shoved. Like, it's super violent, and you know the world they depict is violent. But I feel like there are a lot of times where the gameplay overdoes its explicit nature, and it makes me not feel any empathy for the player character who from the story's perspective, I should be feeling lots for.
I watched you playing it, and I played a little bit of it on your file, and I just...
yeah.
I
did some things.
I had fun with it. but, like, what I understand from the player that you play as in Mafia, like, you're an ex-veteran who's, like, basically...
Who's black.
Who's black, who's basically... has a complicated life.
Okay.
And like, I don't see him as, and in my limited experience, Devin knows a lot more about this character since he's playing his game, but from what I can tell, like, I don't look at him as a violent murderer. I know that he murders, but, like, I don't think he has that, like, that... He, like, has that same itch to want to just stab someone right in their face. I think he's willing to kill someone, but I don't see him as being that ultra-violent.
He's a Batman, not a Joker.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's a much better way to say that.
Yeah, there's so much disconnect. I mean, and again, like, I don't want to talk too much because I do want to compare that game to Watch Dogs when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so many points where that game just splits between being amazing and just what the heck happened. But are there any other games, or are there any games we can think of that go over the, I mean, this shouldn't be too hard, that go over the top with, like, sexual content that get in the way of
I mean, unrealistically perambulous boobs in Dead or Alive, your fighting game.
I heard the Duke Nukem hat was bad in terms of that. I hadn't played it, but...
That's what...
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that it's, like, known for, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I heard it was done poorly.
Yeah.
Just, it felt gratuitous in nature, not for the storytelling.
No, that's basically... It's, like, Duke Nukem is, like... It's, like, think of, like, what every conservative parent thinks about what video games are.
Oh.
And it's, that's like, it's like, oh, okay. This is actually...
That's perfect.
A game. Yeah. And, you know, I've also seen, like, that go in the opposite direction, though. And mm-hmm. this happens a lot more with, you know, movies and like, sitcoms. But if like, there's a, you know, show about the mob, but it's, like, if it's a PG-13 movie, you like, hear all these, you know, tough mobsters not swearing ever. Like, dang it, I'm gonna get these gosh darn...
That would take these me out completely.
Sons
that,
of bees.
Yeah.
These ruffians.
Yeah. You're like, they would never, like, they wouldn't speak like that. And immediately, whenever that happens, that always just, like, takes me out.
That would take me out.
I'm like, just say it.
It's the
just
worst.
Just say it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and like, there's just certain things that, like, remind you that there are restrictions in place. And I think when you're talking about a video game, like, and going back to the Marvel example, you could have Iron Man never, like, kill a human, but you're fine with him killing aliens because, like, aliens don't have... You know,
feelings.
They don't have the same value, you know. Mm-hmm. But, or even in, like, you know, spy movies, when, like, James Bond is, like, killing,
just mowing people down,
killing all of these, like, henchmen. You know, it's like, you can accept that. I mean, it's not bloody because no one bleeds, whatever.
Yeah, like, same as in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, everyone just gets quote unquote knocked out,
exactly,
punched, and they just fall to the ground.
Yeah.
So, they're fine.
And it's like, I'm willing to accept that, like that doesn't take me out of the movie.
Because it's part of the universe that you accept as Marvel. It's like, you know, it's not gonna be a bloodbath. This isn't Custer's last stand. Yeah. This is Captain America Civil War. Yeah.
And I don't know. It's like, that doesn't take me out of it because I'm not watching it to have realistic depictions of death.
Whereas if you saw Saving Private Ryan, and no one's, you know, eviscerated, you're going to be like, okay, cool, but...
And he's fine. It's saving. It's not that bad.
It depends on the story, I think, that you want to tell. Mm-hmm. And whether that explicit content would help you to that end.
Yeah, I have just one little point that I also was reminded of when I was reading an article. And so recently, Devin and I watched Seven, which is the crime thriller from, like, the mid-90s, this movie's 20 years old, so I'm going to spoil it. Go watch it. It's basically Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt try to track down this serial killer who's
what
been...
What a duo.
Right? What a dream team. Try to track down the serial killer who's been staging these elaborate murders that represent each of the seven deadly sins. Mm-hmm.
It is cool.
They're pretty, like... They're morbidly interesting. But the reason they are morbidly interesting is because they don't, like... The camera doesn't, like, linger on these, like, murder scenes. It just, like, very quickly, like, shows it. And then a lot more is left to the imagination, which makes it more creepy and more resonant. And then, I mean, fast-forwarding to the end of the movie, during the infamous scene when Brad Pitt yells, "What's in the box?" Oh. Spoiler alert! It's the head of his wife.
Gwyneth Paltrow.
That the serial killer, unbeknownst to Brad Pitt until now, pre-killed before this moment. And they never show it. Mm-hmm. But basically the reaction, the camera is low. It's from a worm's eye view when they first show Morgan Freeman opening the box. And, I mean, the emotion on his face is, like, devastating enough.
Yeah.
It would have been tacky had they actually shown it. But because the performances were so good and... you're already emotionally invested, they didn't need to be explicit with it.
Wow. Well, so Kara, would you consider that explicit, even though it wasn't, you know, visually depicted?
I would definitely still consider that explicit, even if it wasn't visually shown.
Definitely thematically explicit.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, to wrap this up, to get some final comments in, do you think games in general are getting better or worse as far as dealing with explicit content and dealing with it well, whether that's overdoing it or underdoing it. Do you think we're getting better at it?
I don't think it's doing anything. I feel like the like majority of games, like baseline now is like, you know, rated M because like we're killing people and then we're like showing blood and it's and that just kind of like they don't explore that as a means of like storytelling. It's just more that like this game has people dying and so it's M.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like it just kind of most games aren't really trying to really use that explicit content for purposes of, you know, story or emotional resonance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kara, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Marcus. I think that a lot of games don't focus on almost the little moments that make us human. I mean, yeah. I think that interactivity is huge in terms of us connecting to the characters, and there's so many moments when I'm playing a game and they don't feel human. They don't feel like people they don't feel like the world has been lived in, and you're just conquering every waypoint instead of really living in the world and appreciating what the characters are saying to you. I actually, at Indiecade, we were talking about storytelling and narrative design and how she called it imperialist design, where you conquer instead of appreciate or instead of explore.
Wow.
And that really stuck with me. And I think that that's where games are going, instead of opening up the world and really getting you into it and appreciate being human and how these characters are like that.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I think you guys hit it on the nail. Valerie, final words?
Be authentic. Those are good words.
Be authentic.
Be authentic. Well, I think that's going to wrap this topic up, and we are right around on time, Marcus.
I like this.
Marcus is so relieved. He's so relieved.
We're getting better at this podcast thing, slowly but surely. If you have any comments, questions, feedback, things to add on to what we've talked about today, or
fan
any
art.
Of our previous topics, fan art, more fan art. We've already received
Explicit fan art.
Don't open up
that Pandora's box.
If you have any of that,
what's in the box?
Cool.
You can get a hold of us, Top Shelf Gaming. We have Facebook and Twitter. You can send us an email to trustcircle@topshelfgaming.net. If you spell it correctly or incorrectly, it'll get to us through the magic of the internet.
Woohoo! Also, read Kara's article.
Yes, please, and comment on that.
It is really good. So come to topshelfgaming.net. We have a lot of great content. And
42 pages worth.
42 pages worth. Yeah, a lot of articles. So especially the last few weeks, there's so much to just dive into, and there's a lot more to come. So thank you for your support, and thank you for joining us. And don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We are a new podcast, and the best way for more people to find us is to tell your friends. But also, rating us helps tell iTunes that more people should see us. So it helps us out.
And they can only count in fives, so like...
Yeah, you have to rate us 5 stars. That's it's kind of this like weird glitch. Don't, like,
don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yeah,
don't worry
about
it.
Just do it. But we are now on Google Play as well.
All right.
And so for all of you Android folk...
if your phone hasn't exploded, you can find us there as well.
Yeah. And we will soon be on... What's the green one? Spotify.
the green one.
And,
all natural.
And SoundCloud.
Nice.
So,
awesome.
You can.
All those
there's
formats.
So many ways to listen to.
There's no excuse.
The circle.
No excuse.
Tell your mom.
Tell your mom. Tell your mom.
Yeah.
And tell your lover.
tell
call your mom. And, she's important.
And hopefully they're different people.
I would hope so.
And with that, I will see you. Goodbye, ladies and spaghetti.
No!